Hello, I'm Courtney Vian, Senior Editor at the Journal of Accountancy, and this is the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Today I have with me Jacob Saul, author of the book, The Reckoning, Financial Accountability and the Rise and Fall of Nations. Jacob is a historian who teaches at the University of Southern California. He's written for the New York Times, Politico, the Boston Globe, and the New Republic. And in 2011, he received a MacArthur Fellowship. Now, this is a book that I think any CPA would really enjoy. It traces the history of accounting from biblical times to the present, but it places the most emphasis on the Renaissance, the court of Louis XIV, and the French Revolution. And one thing I think you'll like about it is it shows how essential accounting is to the growth of the modern state and what happens in times when accounting isn't valued.
How long did it take you to write the book?
It took me 5 years, but it was actually probably took me longer because I'd been working on it. I went into archives all around the world, in Florence. I worked in Holland, in England, sort of 5+ years of really intense work to get that thing done. And I still, as far as I'm concerned, the work is very bare bones.
Yeah, there's so many strands that go into it, the art and literature and history.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, that stuff came later as I figured it out. I mean, actually, one of the most exciting points, I was living in Philadelphia at the time, and I was able to go into the library company, into Ben Franklin's library and archives, and the librarian there, a famous guy, I began talking about the project with him, and he kept bringing out one accounting thing after the next by Franklin, and it became clear that Franklin was not only obsessed with accounting, but saw it as a central tool for building the new American state, building American citizenship. He saw it essential in everything, running his own businesses. And, you know, that's when I sort of began to see even more connections, that there were connections to literature, to moral thought, and to art and everything, because Franklin, in his usual way, and by the way, he is a genius. I never really bought the Franklin as a genius thing until I found all of his accounting work. And then I thought, my God, this guy was such a visionary. And he was a visionary who saw accounting to the point where he wrote his famous autobiography in a ledger book on the debit side, just to show you what it meant to him culturally, spiritually. That's when I began to get the message.
See, that brings me to one aspect of your book that I found really interesting is I never knew most of this stuff. I took history, I took art, I took literature. And yeah, sometimes faculty would talk about, this country was in debt or they went bankrupt. But nobody talks about how they got to that point.
Yeah.
Why do you think accounting history gets so neglected?
Accounting history wasn't neglected, I would say, 50 years ago. There were famous accounting historians, one of whom, Basil Yammi, still alive. He's in his 90s. He was one of the great accounting historians. Accounting is seen these days, and that's what part of my book is about, as a pretty lowly thing. It wasn't seen that way, and there was a big struggle about it. In the 19th century, accounting was at the forefront of people's thought. It was at the center of cultural life. Many of the great writers, Dickens, Balzac, they wrote about accounting. Accounting magazines were more prevalent. Accountants were highly respected and seen as essential people, and that went through the Great Depression in the United States and Britain, where they were the central reformers and people who brought the great reforms after the Great Depression and were central to things like Glass-Steagall and other major reforms. After World War II, they just disappeared. And that, I think, is a huge story, which my book tells part of.
But you write about a time when accountants were considered gentlemen accountants, and they were shoulder to shoulder with kings. And when did that go wrong?
I mean, I really do think that stops with World War II and the Great Depression. I mean, that's when you see the end of these very influential accountants like Lord Benson, who were lords and who were seen as essential national leaders. There used to be really respected accounting journalists. I think Adam Jones at the Financial Times, Robert Bruce at the Times of London, all of them have been let go since my book came out. When I was writing my book, much of the last chapter of my book was written using articles by Adam, I think his name was Adam Jones, I don't have the book in front of me. His work for the Financial Times was fantastic. And one day, that guy disappears, and you do not have a top international accounting journalist anywhere.
What's something the accounting profession could be doing to address this visibility problem?
There should be outreach in every community to help people learn double entry accounting, or some have argued a financial accounting. I still think double entry is the more disciplined and the more human version. They should have spokespeople that they insist get involved with discussions, public debates about financial issues. They should be writing op-eds themselves.
So if there's one central message you'd want readers to take away from the book, what would it be?
One central message. Well, I mean, the central message is you can't understand, for me, how states work unless you understand the role of accounting. And that would be also accrual accounting, because, you know, without a central ledger, you can't manage anything well, and you can't manage a state. And that was the message of the book, that when accounting standards in a state go bad, you know that the state is in crisis.
And I'd like to go back to, like, the glory days for a while. So there was a time when accountants had great power. Can you talk about what the source of that power was and why they were respected and feared?
Well, I mean, first of all, the people who rose to power knew accounting. Accounting is what was once, I mean, by the 18th century, accounting was considered something that gentlemen and people of high social standing should know. So Robert Walpole, the first British prime minister, knew accounting. He had studied Baconian scientific thought and, you know, the new mathematics of the new modern science at Cambridge. And along with that, he studied accounting and knew how to do books. Many of the people who rose to power in the 18th century in Britain knew accounting or understood its basic principles because it was considered a central thing that people of high birth had to know something about. It didn't solve all the problems, but it allowed them to manage their way out of a number of crises with vision and strategy. So that you didn't bring an accountant in. You actually said, look, how are we going to get out of this? How are we going to build and manage for the future? And accounting was, their knowledge of accounting was central. You know, back in the 14th century in the Italian city-states and during the late Middle Ages and the Renaissance, most of the people who were running the Italian city-states knew accounting. They didn't necessarily all keep double-entry books, but they knew how to do double-entry. And that was the birth of modern constitutionalism, the birth of modern representative politics, the birth of modern republicanism. I mean, everything happened in northern Italy, and accounting was there on the scene in the 1340s.
So you devote a couple of chapters of your book to the French Revolution and the accountant Jacques Necker, who had a pivotal role in it. Can you tell us a little bit more about Necker?
Well, I mean, Necker actually did start the French Revolution. A Swiss banker named Jacques Necker had been brought in by Louis XVI not only to secure loans, but to revamp the taxation system, which had been a project that Jean-Baptiste Colbert had started about 110 years earlier. Revamping the taxation system literally meant putting double entry accounting in and bringing professional tax collectors who kept real account books. That's what accounting reform really starts with. And as Necker was unable to do those reforms, he was attacked by his opponents. And what he did was he felt himself threatened. And so he tried to secure his position by publishing a doctored version of state accounts with a kind of double entry balance sheet at the end of it as a political statement. It was a brilliant move, and it caused literally a genre to emerge in France where people argued about their political legitimacy by publishing their accounts, true or false. And over a period, and by the way, who was watching this but the founders of the American Treasury, and they were like, wow, we need to do this too. And they did, by the way. But the French Revolution, the day the Bastille fell, it happened because people had heard that Necker had been fired. And they were worried that that meant the king was going to bring troops on Paris, and they were outside the Bastille, and there was basically a riot, and they attacked the Bastille, and the rest is history. So accounting was there at the scene the whole time, and some of the first legislation done by the revolutionary government was everyone who works for the state will have to hand in their receipts, be audited, hand in their accounts. There will be a Bureau of Accounting. The state will render public accounts. It was central to the French Revolution and to the American Revolution because under absolute monarchs, early versions of, we could say, sort of, you know, proto-dictators, you know, nobody rendered accounts. No kings were ever audited. And so the idea of transparency was central to these new governments, in particular the American government. By the way, George Washington gladly handed over his accounts, which didn't make him look that great. But he stated, in a republic, you know, the leaders are going to have to show their accounts.
Oh, in the good old days.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And
those were the standards with which this country was started with. Mm-hmm. There was fighting about it. And at one point, by the way, the government, the early government, Hamilton, they knew that, I think it was New Hampshire, was keeping terrible accounts. And they tried to humiliate them into publishing their state accounts. I mean, this stuff goes way, way back. But anyone, you just have to, you know, Hamilton's idea of the Federalist Papers was also an idea that each state would send their balance sheets that were something that could be verified to the central state. So the central state could write a central balance sheet. And that is how the state would get loans. America was born into debt. This idea that countries can't live with debt actually isn't true. Early America couldn't survive without debt because it couldn't pay for its army. And the whole point about having a good balance sheet was getting good terms and then being able to manage your debt.
Yeah. And Necker was kind of a celebrity, wasn't he?
Jacques Necker was, well, yeah, he was a philosopher. He was a famous philosopher. His wife had a salon. His daughter was Madame de Staël. He was a great publicist, so he would write books about financial administration that were about accounting standards in public finance that were bestsellers. I mean, you know, again, the founders, people like Jefferson and Hamilton were snapping those books up. He was a star. He was a sort of star banker, philosopher, finance minister, and accountant, you know. And the reforms that caused him the most trouble were his accounting reforms, and he knew it. So he made accounting the central question of the day. And he was able to do that because he was a very, very brilliant publicist. So, you know, this, when we look at the history of where the modern Republican tradition comes from, accounting's right there at the center. The people who started the reforms and the revolutions and then built the states that followed made accounting central to all of it.
What's one thing you'd like readers to take away from this book?
I think that we have to stop and pause and rethink not only what accounting is today, but what accountants are and where accounting's taught. I mean, it shocks me that many MBAs don't know accounting. It shocks me more that every Harvard student doesn't learn accounting as well. If they did, it would really be in their thoughts as the people who are trained to be leaders move forward in the world. And so, you know, you can go back to Renaissance Italy, you can go to Spain, or you can go to places like Holland, where modern capitalism was truly invented, and they had stable economic growth for almost 200 years, if you can imagine that. And the main company, which was the first privately traded company, which was partially overseen by the state, had incredibly positive returns for more than 100 years. A lot of that had to do with the fact that the whole society was literate in accounting, and the government was literate, and everyone doing business was literate. Where you find accounting literacy, you find economic stability and success.
And one last question, just this would be kind of a fun one. So if you could go back in time and meet one person from accounting history, who would you pick?
I'm just trying to, so I, you know, immediately I thought of Franklin because, you know, he was so verbal about what he was doing. He was so conscious of it. I think that would be the person you'd want to talk to. So he's still the person you want to study because he was so open about how deep accounting ran in his understanding and his vision of the world. His autobiography, I'd love to ask him, you know, like, did you really mean to write your autobiography in a central, in a ledger book on the debit side? And, you know, to see if he said, oh, it was just the only book I had and I wrote on that side, or for him to say, and I'm more or less sure of this because he was so verbal about it, where else would I write my autobiography? You know, people kept moral account books. He did too. And then I would just like to ask him the simple question. Do you think America, this fledgling country, can survive if its citizens don't understand basic accounting? If we're going to be a commercial trading nation? And I can assume what his answer would be, because he talked about it openly. He talked about accounting and its importance. But, you know, you don't have to necessarily go time travel and meet these people. You can read through their papers, and instead of ignoring the accounting, as historians have done, you can focus on it, and that's what I did.
Once again, that was Jacob Saul of the University of Southern California, and the title of his book is The Reckoning, Financial Accountability and the Rise and Fall of Nations. This has been the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Thank you for listening.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.